This is The Book in the Spade, a report on the latest discoveries and developments in biblical archaeology. Here's your host, Gordon Govier.
In our last two programs, we heard about the 2016 excavations at Kirbet El Makadr, a small site 9 miles north of Jerusalem that archaeologist Scott Stripling believes was the city of Ai, captured by the Israelites as recorded in Joshua 7 and 8. 16 seasons of excavation have also revealed several other eras of occupation, including a possible connection to the city of Ephraim, visited by Jesus, according to John 11:54. Next year, Scott Stripling and his team from the Associates for Biblical Research will begin a new dig at the Old Testament site of Shiloh. As we wrapped up our conversation, Scott also mentioned an extra project that took place in Jerusalem after his work was finished at Kirbet El Makadr.
I had been asked to supervise a project of exploring a tunnel in the Jaffa Gate area that runs toward the Temple Mount. They needed an archaeologist to go down and assess this tunnel and see what all was there. There was a record dating back to 1863 that Conrad Schick, one of the early explorers, had found this tunnel, and we didn't understand how it ran, because we're always attempting to understand how the Jaffa Gate area, which would have been the area of Herod's palace and so forth, which became Pilate's Praetorium, how it connects with the Temple Mount during the first century. So opened up the area and let it air out a bit, and then I was the first to descend down in here, and I didn't want any of the team to go first because we weren't sure if there was a buildup of gas and so forth down there. As I got about halfway down the tunnel on this rope ladder, I could sense that there was a draft coming through, and so that was a good sign. Got to the bottom, took measurements and photographs and so forth, and saw that it was safe. So I had one of my team members, Abigail Levitt, come down and join me. She's a little smaller than I am, and she was able to fit into some of the areas of the tunnel that were more challenging for me. And so we took measurements, which went about 50 meters in both directions before there was cave-in and collapse. There were some vertical shafts, and we even found Conrad Schick's signature on the wall, if you can believe that. C. Schick, wow. 1863. So terribly exciting day. And I'm actually planning an article on Conrad Schick right now because it's so exciting.
Tell us a little bit more about Conrad Schick and what he found in Jerusalem during his time.
Well, he was a Protestant missionary in Jerusalem, but he worked for the PEQ, the Palestinian Exploration Quarterly, and wrote a number of articles. He explored things, and the work of guys like Schick are so important because Jerusalem is such a different city than it is now. Many of the things that are under the modern city were still visible at that time. We go back to their notes many times, whether it's Robinson or Warren or Schick and these guys. We have to just go from their accounts, which many times proved to be very, very accurate. Schick was also famous for the models that he built, like at the World's Fair, models of underground Jerusalem and how these tunnel systems run. And if one visits Christ Church today, you can actually see the models that Schick built there. They're quite well known.
Jerusalem is not a classic tell as we think of other ancient cities, but it certainly has its various levels and is built up above what it was in ancient times. Thinking of the Via Dolorosa, for instance, that goes from the Temple Mount area to the Church of the Holy Sepulchre, that street is at a higher level than it would have been during the time of Jesus.
That's right. And I'm glad you mentioned the Via Dolorosa in Jerusalem, because I think there's a very, very good argument to be made that the true Via Dolorosa is actually running through Jaffa Gate from where the Armenian parking lot is today, which is awaiting excavation, a project that ABR may very well be involved in the future, where we believe Herod's palace would have been. Pilate then would have been using it as a praetorium. This is where Jesus would have been imprisoned, received the scourging, and then ultimately going to the Church of the Holy Sepulchre from there. So actually running right in front of Christ Church may prove to be the true Via Dolorosa, but you're right about the elevation at what has traditionally been venerated as the Via Dolorosa, but we're pretty interested in the possible identification running through Jaffa Gate area because of a possible future excavation there.
So there's basically two major schools of thought. One believes that Jesus was tried in the Antonia Fortress area, which is close to the Temple Mount today, and the other would say that Jesus was tried in Herod's palace, which is near the Jaffa Gate.
That's right. You also have the Ecce Homo arch, part of the Ecce Homo convent, which, of course, Pilate's words were Ecce Homo, behold the man. But I don't know of anyone who's seriously holding to that identification of where the Ecce Homo arch is now. So, yeah, I think you're right about the two major schools of thought.
So there are tunnel systems all over Jerusalem that go back to these earlier times. I know when I was in Jerusalem a year ago, we went through Hezekiah's tunnel to the Pool of Siloam and then up through that recently excavated street and drainage canal area. So you spend, I think it's probably more than a mile underground. And so there's all kinds of other tunnels like you've been exploring.
Josephus mentions that the rebels during the Great Revolt, when the city fell, were actually hiding in these drainage systems, or these tunnels, if you will. And I'm pretty sure that that's what we were exploring last week in Jerusalem. And as you mentioned, when you're going up those steps from the Pool of Siloam up toward the Temple Mount, then you'll see the drainage systems and where they were broke open by the Romans.
So you think that this tunnel that you explored dates back to about 2,000 years ago?
Absolutely. From the structure of it, the type of stone, and the pottery that I saw while I was in there, then have no doubt about it.
And this is an area near the Jaffa Gate, which is right next to the recently excavated area connected to Herod's palace. And this is an area that I haven't been able to visit yet. It's just been opened up in the last couple of years. And this is a place that you can also see some archaeology that goes back to the time of Jesus, as this is the location of Herod's temple.
You can see the new excavations in the Tower of David, which a member of my staff was involved with those, and so we were able to get behind the scenes look at that. You have Herod's three great towers there, Phasael, Hippicus, and Mariamne. Then continuing on underneath their property, what appears to be Herod's palace. And this confirms our view that the Armenian parking lot today is over what would have been Herod's palace. And if so, the tunnel that I was exploring would have been connecting that palace with the Temple Mount.
Wow. And there's no idea how far this tunnel goes in terms of what you've seen so far.
Well, it had collapsed after 50 meters. If this were to be excavated one day, we would have to clear that tumble and debris and make sure that it was safe and so forth to proceed on. But it would be terribly interesting to find out, wouldn't it?
For those that just joined us, we're talking with Scott Stripling, who is dig director of the Kermit L. McConter excavations, which have just finished, and as we talked, is going to be directing a new excavation at Shiloh, the home of the ancient tabernacle after the Exodus, but also has spent some time in Jerusalem in the last few days after the excavation season ended at Kermit L. McConter. You were involved in this tunnel exploration and also had a chance to visit some other sites in the area. I understand that there's a major project just beginning at the Church of the Holy Sepulchre. I've seen some articles about some renovations that have already started there into the traditional location of the tomb of Jesus. This is a pretty major deal.
Well, it really is, because it's been badly needed for a long time. The utricle, as it's called, has been in a bad state of repair. It's got all kinds of framing to hold it up right now. But finally, the five different churches that have rites in the Church of the Holy Sepulchre came to an agreement, sort of under pressure from the IAA, that if you guys don't agree to this, we're going to do it anyway. And so they came to an agreement. The work has begun, and it's great because, I mean, as far as Christian heritage go, it doesn't get any more important than the tomb of Jesus. I mean, the place of the burial, resurrection, and crucifixion, all there at the Church of the Holy Sepulchre.
This is an interesting site to visit in comparison with the Garden Tomb, which is the other tradition related to the crucifixion and resurrection of Jesus. In recent years, archaeologists have had a chance to look at the Garden Tomb and concluded that the history and the evidence is just not there, and really is much stronger evidence for the Church of the Holy Sepulchre as being the actual location of the tomb of Jesus.
I agree, and for once there is consensus within the archaeological community that there is no evidence at the Garden Tomb. In fact, it's an Iron Age tomb. It's not a first century tomb. And while it's a beautiful area, and back in the 19th century, there was a lot of belief that perhaps that was the place. We have the famous funeral of Horatio Spafford being preached by D.L. Moody there at the Garden Tomb. But with time, we've come to see that it's just not fitting in properly. You have some other outliers, like, for example, James Tabor has a wild theory that Jesus was crucified on the Mount of Olives. But there is a general consensus that the Church of the Holy Sepulchre is the place.
And the Church of the Holy Sepulchre really has a very interesting history. As you mentioned, there's five major religions involved. They don't really get along. And in fact, as I understand it, the key to the door of the front gate is actually in the possession of a Muslim family in Bethlehem who come and open the door every day.
Well, it's sad but true. It reminds me of when I was working in Jordan and we were storing our tools in a mosque. So we were given the keys to the mosque. So here we have the opposite going on. Actually, a Muslim family does have the keys to the Church of the Holy Sepulchre. It's more symbolic than anything, but historically there has not been really good cooperation between the Christian groups there, and hopefully that will improve in the future.
And yet the evidence for that being the location of the crucifixion and resurrection of Jesus is pretty strong.
Yeah, it really is. It's evident from the few times that you have gone underneath the layers there. It was a quarry, a rock quarry in the first century. And when quarrying was done, then they would just follow the natural softer fissures in the limestone. And this would end up creating caves, of course. So it really made a perfect place to, not only because it was high for crucifixion, but then there were caves nearby there, so it was ideal for burial caves. And at that point, it was outside the city. Agrippa built his wall in 44 AD and brought it inside the city. And remnants of that wall can actually be seen running underneath the backyard of the Albright Institute today. There's a wall actually sticking out in the modern street today that is part of that third wall. But during the time of Jesus, it was actually outside the city. We would love to have people join us at Shiloh. Our website will be coming online soon. But for now, if folks go to makater.org, they can get information on both digs there. We look forward to having folks follow along with what we're doing.
And we'll have the link to that website on our website. And we also, of course, have information on our website for our quarterly magazine, Artifacts, which has a digest that allows our readers to keep up with all the latest developments and discoveries in biblical archaeology. And you can find out more about Artifacts by going to our website at radioscribe.com.
I always take Artifacts magazine with me in Israel. Not only do I read all the articles, but some of the sites that are mentioned, I go and visit them while I'm there. So it's an asset to me, and I know it would be an asset to your listeners.
Well, thank you, Scott Stripling, dig director at Kirbit L. McCotter, who has recently left his job at Wharton County Junior College in Wharton, Texas, and will be joining Houston Baptist University, and also is working on some other projects. Thanks very much, Scott, for joining us on today's program. We'd like to invite our listeners back next time for more Backgrounders on the Bible through Biblical Archaeology on Book in the Spade.
The Book in the Spade is produced by Scribe Media. For information on Biblical Archaeology resources or obtaining a copy of this program on CD, go to our website at radioscribe.com.